We don't talk about that here. Workshop, and our first speaker will be Charles W.
Hey group, my name is Charles Maddock. And if you're sitting in the back, I'm a little boisterous, so I don't think anybody's going to miss me. And standing in front of mics is kind of funny. You ever been on a witness stand, and the dude you ratting on is right there? And they ask you the question, you trying to cover them, but you can't. And they say, is that him? And you go, yeah. And he say, can you speak up? You say, yeah. And they say, yeah, who? Him, you know. And the mic's in my face, you know. I'm like, dang, I'm not snitching on nobody but me. You know, that's what I'm telling on today. And I was talking to Don, and we was talking about being nervous. And I remember when I came here, my sponsor used to say, being nervous before you speak is a good thing. They said, because if you calm, you're probably going to get up there and start lying and start making up some stuff. They said, so the fact that you're feeling nervous is good. And also, when I stood up here, like all that stuff I thought about that I was going to be like so profound and share with y'all, is gone. So I'm like, oh, I got to stick on the topic. And I know somebody out there saying, well, gee, I wish you'd get to the topic. You know, it's all right, man. I'm just trying to loosen up. My clean date is January the 18th, 1988. And I'm grateful, right, because every time I come to a meeting, right, I think about the fact that I ain't got to use no more, no matter what. And I know there's a lot of people here today that could probably say, you know, I didn't have to get high today. I didn't have to do that to myself again and again and again and again. You know, the miracle happened. And, you know, every time I just think about the fact that I got clean, man, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. And for the folks in here that might be younger than me, I wasn't always this old. I came to Narcotics Anonymous. It was a couple of people that was not even my age, just one other guy that was close to my age. I came in, I was 25. And I remember just being in awe. I was like, man, these old people have really destroyed them lives. But then I thought about my life. You know, I hadn't done jack from 15 to 25 except get high, you know, and find out how to mess up other people's lives. So I'm just grateful to be here today. And when I was thinking about the topic of we don't talk about this here, it's a lot of stuff, right, you could talk about. You know, we don't talk about religion and we don't talk about politics. And there's a lot of stuff that we don't talk about. But as I thought about the message and I prayed, and it's funny, all the way here to the meeting, people just kept hugging me. Like the whole time I've been here, I've been seeing people and how you doing and sitting down. But on my journey to this room, people who I just didn't know or hadn't seen just hugged me. And I was like, wow, you know, I'm getting the support. They don't even know they're giving me support all the way to this workshop. And so what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to talk about a couple things that I have experience with. And we didn't read the identity statement, but one thing I want to talk about is alcoholism, right? This is Narcotics Anonymous, and there's a whole lot of reasons why we don't talk about that here. In our literature, it says it's too limited a term, right? And the second thing is, and this is my experience, I don't remember wanting a trick for a bottle of Wild Irish Rose, you know what I mean? I could have got that over with one, you know what I mean? I'd have been like, woo, I'm all for the night, you know, I got one, I ain't got to do. And plus, I could have wrote a bum check for $6. I can't see the sheriff coming to look for me. You know, we got this $31 worth of fees on this check. We're going to come lock you up. You know, I'm used to writing them checks for them TVs for about $962 that I ain't got no money for at that address on the check that ain't mine with a driver's license that says Jose Miguel Estrado Walker. You know, that's my story, you know, because it costs too much money. You know what I mean? And the other thing was I had to pretend I'm somebody else. And a lot of times people can't relate to that story. I can relate being 18 and showing ID, but I can't relate to people who that's all you had to do to go get it. We just show somebody some ID and say I'm 18 or whatever and go get it. I'm used to being somebody else. You know, I was never comfortable with me in the first place. So my disease was telling me whatever you got to go do to go get it, go get it. You know, and so when I think about the disease of addiction, I can think like some people can relate to me when I talk about busting a script and twirling and flipping the stem and waiting for it to come out the cooker and, you know what I mean, and dope sick. And y'all can relate to that. You know what I mean? And some of y'all can relate to having the dry heaves and needing to wash it down. And that's all right. Because we accept that here in Narcotics Anonymous. It say alcohol is a drug, you know? When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, it's a banner downstairs, and it says 1988. It was in Crystal City. That was the second CPRCNA convention. And the literature on the table was like a couple of NA books and a whole lot of AA literature on the table. That's how it was in Narcotics. It wasn't a whole lot of information. Now we got workbooks. It works how and why. We got a journal. I mean, so there's no reason for me to have to go run and get some other information. It's all here for me now. So I'm real grateful, man, that the strives and the gains that Narcotics Anonymous has made, that I'm able to share what we call an NA message, right? A lot of us talk about Jimmy K, but how many of y'all seen Jimmy K? I met some people that knew Jimmy K. I met some people that talked to Jimmy K. But I don't know Jimmy K. Matter of fact, I don't even know where Jimmy K lived. I know it was California, right? And when he got himself together. But for my experience is when I use, I'm also homeless, right? So I can't go to Anchorage, Ohio, or whatever that place is, because he had a place to stay. I was homeless, you know, the homeless shelters, and I know what that is. You know what I mean? But I couldn't relate to a lot of things that people were talking about when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. It also, you know, the information that we share with each other in here is so pertinent. Like in the second step, in the basic text, it talks about your higher power just being loving and caring and greater than you. That's it. You know what I mean? Nobody sent me to 6 pages. Now, I'm just going to share my experience. Early in recovery, if I could read a half a page, I was doing good. Because my mind would jump time in a minute. I would sit there and read some NA literature and start thinking about what I'm going to do later on. Because when I'm using, that's all my mind does. It goes to the next get high. So now, when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, people were saying sit down and, you know, try to get some coffee and read literature. I couldn't pay attention to all that. And I don't know about nobody else's story. It took me 19 months to get 8 hours of sleep. You know what I mean? So, wasn't a whole lot of studying the book. It was just, go to meeting, Charles, don't get high. If you want to get high, give me a call. And the way my sponsor used to carry me was, he said, if you get high, that's okay, just keep coming back. You know, so the message was pertinent to me. Listening to other people talking about what they did to stay high one day at a time was pertinent to me. You know, seeing what lengths people were going through was pertinent to me in Narcotics Anonymous. And just my story, I just couldn't relate. I'm not knocking it. It talks about in that literature. We're grateful for it, right? It gave us the steps. You know, we say we used it from their fellowship, but I just couldn't relate to all them stories, man. It was just beyond me. It was really beyond me. So I thank God for the predecessors. I really do. But in Narcotics Anonymous, we just don't talk about that. And it also tells us, it's an identity statement, say we are addicts. We don't suffer from two diseases. We only have one. And a lot of people think, well, you know, it's all right. I could just keep coming back. Nah, what you're doing is you're giving somebody else a mixed message. You're telling them that it's all right for me to come to the meeting and talk about the big book. Say, accept this on page 422 or whatever like that, you know, and you kind of co-signing it by letting people go like that. That doesn't mean that I'm coming to a meeting and if you don't share what I think you need to share, I need to beat you upside the head. But we share with people in a loving way. We say, brother, you're an addict. We understand if you feel like that. Just keep coming back. But this is what we call ourselves here in Narcotics Anonymous. Now, on the flip side of this, still some folks still come to Narcotics Anonymous, don't say they're just an addict. But that's okay. We still love them anyway. So it's not the message I'm trying to share about, we don't talk about it here, is not about exclusion. It's about inclusion. Right? But it's just, we just have to be more informed. The other thing I wanted to talk about as it relates to what we don't talk about here, and I learned this kind of like through trying to help somebody else, we don't talk about other people's experience. And let me share a real story with you. I know somebody who lost, like they went to work one day and they're not in recovery. They went to work one day and they came back and their wife and children had passed away. And what I remember early in recovery was hearing somebody in my area share that they went to a meeting and came back home and their family had passed away in a fire, you know. And so what I was calling myself doing, I said, well, I'm going to share his story with this dude to help him out. And as I was on my way to share it with me, that little conscious contact that I had with the God of my understanding popped in his head. Is that your experience? Do you really have that experience? Is that your story? And I thought about it, and y'all ever had this experience where you do the, I tell him something, and when it get over here, we try to see what it was, and it ain't the same? It's the same thing. I've heard people come to me and talk about, this what you need to do to file bankruptcy. When you get divorced, girl, you go down there and file that paper yourself. You'll be all right. Ain't filed for a divorce, but they telling you how to file for a divorce. Ain't no lawyer. Ain't never been married. But they're going to tell you how to do it because they heard it in the meeting and they missed half of it because they was subgrouping, you know. And I'm feeling the same way, right? God gave me the message that he gave me so I could share that with somebody else. Not so I can share your story with somebody else or your story with somebody else. Because I usually get your story wrong. You know what I'm saying? You tell your story better than I can tell your story. And what happens is when we get into telling other people's stories, what we do, we creating a brand new story. Right? And by the time that story makes it through a couple of revisions, it ain't even the story you done made up. You know what I mean? And you think you got it firsthand, so you had some real clear information to pass on to the next person. And then what I learned is, that's what we don't talk about there here. It says we share our experience, strength, and hope. It says we talk about what we went through. We talk about the struggles that we have had in recovery. And I'm pretty sure I look around this room, we've had all kind of experiences. And the beauty is, I know that if I come to a meeting and I raise my hand and I talk about what I'm going through, somebody has that experience. And if you come to me and you haven't and you're telling somebody else's story, I'm going to know it. Right? I'm going to peep it and I'm going to say, you know, some of that information, and I'm going to give you that look. You know, what the hell is he talking about? She's talking about. And that's what I've learned since I've been here. And we don't talk about that here. And the last thing, and this goes with our traditions, and I'm gonna shut up. Because I know Don over there saying, no, please, don't put me up here. That's all right, Don. It's good. It talks about anonymity. And it talks about bearing no name. And I got a whole lot of good stories to tell on that. This is my experience of being here. I have been to meetings where people in relationships who are not getting along too well and they need to talk about where they at, instead of them just saying that, you know, and you know how sometimes the information can be a little bit too personal. But what happens is they raise their hand and they talk about, they say, you, he ain't doing this, he ain't doing that, and he don't know how to do it right in the meeting. Now, what do you think that does for people when they come to a meeting and they're trying to recover just like you? I'm not coming to that meeting. And I'm not coming around them because they're going to talk about my business in the meeting. We don't talk about other people's stuff in here. It's extremely damaging. I'll give you another experience. Good buddy of mine, early in recovery, he had one of them messages with 2 years clean. I mean, you would get up and be like, whoa, we going to the moon with this thing. So he's sharing all this good information. And the lady in the back raised her hand and she said, Mr. Man, you telling me all this good stuff. But last night, when I was sick and suffering on the corner, and you shorted me out of the 10 I was trying to charge you, it didn't seem like you was trying to help me. In the meeting. You know what I'm saying? So we got to be real careful how we talk about other people in the meetings, you know? And then we try to get the things like, we're trying to share the story that we're going through a conflict in area service, so I'm not going to talk about you. But we both know that you're the chair for the area, and I'm the vice chair for the area. So I'm going to get up in the meeting, and I'm going to say, and the chair of the area, which, you know, such and such and such and such and such. And for real, the information said such and such and such. We all do that in meetings. Why don't we do that? Because even though I'm not saying a name, we all know what we're talking about. And what I'm doing is I'm not really sharing. No, I'm not sharing about what's going on with me. I'm talking about you. I'm not sharing nothing personal. Everything I'm sharing is about what you ain't doing right. Same with relationships. Coming to a meeting, and my wife is not in recovery, and she loves to tell me this. She said, how come I can't raise my hand and share? Because that would be a mess. That would be a mess. Because she's going to tell everything, and she ain't got no cut cards, and all my business is going to be in the air. So I tell her, you got to be an addict, honey. You know, you go to them Naranon meetings, you talk all you want, but in here, this is my business, and you can't share. For all the right reasons, right? I might be lying. I don't do that. You know, I got such a swell relationship. And then y'all find out I'm lying up to my teeth. Plus, I've learned from my experience the truth gonna come out of me anyway. It's just a matter of time, you know. I've done and seen and have experienced so many things in recovery, man. This fellowship has been wonderful to me. You know, and just for people who are in here, and I'm going to say this as I close, a lot of times we try to talk about, now, you know, we got to go past what I just said. When it comes to me personally, I have gone through so many things in Narcotics Anonymous that I really didn't think that I could get any freedom. And there's a lot of things that I've done. And I know I've heard a lot, you know, there's a lot of people in here and you all got your own opinions that I've had to shit. I've had to free myself. A lot of it was not legal. But what has been happening was I was clean, living some illegal things, and I just really couldn't find any freedom until I opened my mouth and shared it in a meeting. And some of the things I shared about was being clean and still committing identity theft, except they just wasn't calling it that then. I've been clean and married to two people at the same time with legal documents in my possession. I've been clean and have forged all kind of government documents in the name of I'm trying to get mine. You just got to get yours. So I've shared all this information in the meeting. I've shared things about my personal body in the meeting because I needed some freedom. I needed to know that I was all right in spite of how I was feeling on the inside. So as I was sharing the information and people was coming to me, they was like, you know, what I thought they was going to say to me was, man, you know, you don't need to talk. What people say was, man, thank you because you were setting me free. Now, I know a lot of people in here might not feel that way about it. And I know some of our literature may tell us that we don't go and put everything out in the meeting like that. But I'm talking about me getting free. I don't know where you at in your recovery. I don't know what kind of program you work. But my sponsors have always told me, set yourself free because you might just use behind that stuff. You know, so I've always been the type of person that says, talk about where you at. In spite of how you feel or what you may think people might say, but try not to do it at the expense of anybody else. You know, please try not to do that. Now that I sit here and shared all that, I know somebody in this room going to go out and do exactly what we said we shouldn't do, but that's all right. You know, because we're here together. We're learning together. We're trying to learn to love each other. Some of us black, some of us white, some of us straight, some of us gay, some of us from the West Coast, some of us from the East Coast, some from down south, some from up north. So what makes you think we're going to get in the room and we're going to be all right with each other just because we got high? You know, as the fog started to lift in my life, I was able to see that, yes, we are more alike than different. And that means if I'm arrogant, it's probably a good chance you're real arrogant, too. You know what I mean? If you conceited, I'm probably conceited. I got, yeah, me too. You know, I ain't no need trying to cover it up. You know, so we really the same. And we're really just trying to love one another. So and the reason I'm saying it, I just didn't want this message to be about condemnation. That's all. I just didn't want to come in here and share things and try to beat up on somebody who may have been doing everything I'm talking about and just can't find the freedom from it or just don't know that they, you know, they don't have to do that anymore. That's enough out of me. Thanks for letting me share. I'm going to keep coming back.
Thanks, Charles. For our next speaker, Don B.
Hi, family. I'm Dawn and I'm Natty. And I'm real nervous. I want to thank the program committee for calling me and asking me to share on this topic. Because the day before they called me, I decided I wasn't coming to this convention. But before I decided I wasn't coming to this convention, I prayed and I asked God, allow his will and not mine be done. And I got that phone call. It was things going on in my life, and I had to make a choice. Either come to the convention or proceed with my dreams. And God seemed fit that I was able to do both. This is my first time ever speaking in a convention. And to have this topic, I wrestled with this topic up until 20 minutes from getting here. Because it can go so many different ways, you know. But I'm putting it in God's hands. To tell you a little bit about me is, outside of I used to live and live to use, that's why I'm here. A little bit before that, I'm an only child. And I was born and raised in Philadelphia. Born and raised to a police officer and a government worker in a middle-class neighborhood. Who wanted the best for their child. They had all the, you know, good things. My parents was very loving and caring in their own way. And I'm sharing this to get on image time because I was raised up on image time. And what's been happening is the God of my understanding has been stripping me. Of my image. The image that's all I knew. My parents, being though my father was a police officer and my mother was a government worker, my father was raised in West Philadelphia. My mother was raised in Germantown. My mother is real light. My father is real dark. So that was a showpiece for my father. And what I learned in this family, they did the best that they could for me with the knowledge that they had. And I'm saying all this to say, and I'm going here, because my house was the party house. It was all the alcohol in the basement. It was all the fellas after work. You know, my mother never drank, but she entertained. You know, so early on, I had to learn how to pretend. Because my mother didn't like it, for real. But she tolerated it. And I'm saying that to say, if it wasn't for the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I would have tolerated a whole bunch of bullshit, excuse me, and probably been dead. Because you all have told me I don't have to tolerate the unnecessary. I can remove myself, you know. And eventually that's what I had to do with my family. Because being the only child, my parents wanted to dictate my life. Nothing was never good enough for them. The people that I saw wasn't good enough for them. And when I admitted that I had a problem and I needed help, that was an embarrassment to them. The first embarrassment was that I was 15 years old, living in a middle-class neighborhood, pregnant. So what they did was they shipped me to South Philadelphia, to a home for pregnant girls. You know, and I'm not saying this to get any kind of sympathy. I'm sharing this because this is my experience before my drug addiction really bloomed. This is all the stuff that allowed me and helped me to smoking crack, to shooting dope, popping pills, drinking alcohol, rubbing alcohol, doing any and everything to get that next high. I wanted to be so accepted in my family and be right to my parents and show them no wrong. You know, I pretended to go to school, to college. I went to a community college, and the fake me out was, see, on my mother's side of the family, we was all in education. So I had to go to, you know, pretend that I was wanted some education. I worked at a high school for special education department, and I was an aide. And I was smoking marijuana at that time. And I remember one thing my father said to me, because, see, I got the joint out of his pocket. Mm-hmm. My very first joint was out of his coat pocket. Is that I hope this doesn't lead you to anywhere else. And not knowing that my mission was headed for destruction, you know. Anyway, I was going to school pretending that I was going to college. At this time, I had a baby, and they wanted me to give this child up for adoption because it was an embarrassment to them. I refused to give it up for adoption. What I did was, the social worker gave me an option that I could put her in foster care. And that's what I chose to do, because a 15-year-old, having a child, still in school, just going to ninth grade, which is high school, I didn't know what to do. And again, being told that my family was in education, I had an aide come to the house, so I didn't have to go right to school. To get myself together, to get my body back in shape, so nobody would know that I had a baby. But this foster parent knew that I didn't want to give my child up for adoption, which was an Italian lady in South Philadelphia. She allowed me to come in every holiday, every weekend that I had off. She let me come and visit my child. And I did that. I did that faithfully up until we moved down here in 1980. And then that's when my parents decided that I could have my child because we was moving out of the city. That sticks with me because that was deep-rooted, and I didn't want y'all to know that. That stuff still hurts. The difference is today I don't treat my children any differently. You know, we don't talk about that stuff in here. You know what I'm saying? We don't get to, okay, I could tell you from A, and then next time you see me, I done told you Z. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the in-between? What happened? Mm-hmm. In-between. It took some crying, farting, mm-hmm. pouting, being in that bed in a fertile position with 10 years clean, thinking that I know the steps. But see, until I started living, then the wheels started turning. The process started happening. You know, I heard you talk about the process. That process started happening. You know, I may jump back and forth. I'm still nervous, but it's getting better. You know, I went to school for secretarial science. And if anybody know anything about secretarial science back in the 70s, you had to take dictation. Smoking marijuana. And taking dictation. First of all, trying to learn some shorthand. Oh, no. It didn't work, you know. So I pretended that I was going to school. My grandmother watched my child, and I was going to the boy house to smoke reefer. And have sex. And this went on and on and on until I couldn't fake it out no more. I didn't graduate from school. That lasted maybe a good 2 years. It was a community college, and my grandmother knew because, see, at this time, I had graduated from high school and down in Maryland, and I went back to Philadelphia because I ain't like y'all down here. The buses was too far apart. You know, I could get on a 23 trolley and ride from one end of town to the other end of town and didn't have to get off.
Right.
You know, and that's what I did, pretending to go to school. But now I'm starting to tell a tale. Because I don't have that degree, and some of my dreams, I had to go a roundabout way, because I should cut myself, you know. But for the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and we don't talk about that here, is the topic. For real, I didn't want y'all to know me, the real me. You know, I would go to meetings and somebody would give me a hug and say, "How you doing, Dawn?" "Oh, I'm all right." And deep down inside, I'm in a knot because I done did something over here and scared to tell y'all. You know, first of all, scared to tell my sponsor because you all told me in the beginning that I had to get a sponsor. You know, and I took that real seriously. So I searched, and I got a sponsor. And I started to be a little bit honest with my sponsor and telling her what was going on with me, different things. And the pattern that I seen by doing some writing is that it was always about somebody else. You know, some man. Something, you know, but what my sponsor helped me to realize early on was that I had to talk about me. I had to get honest with me. I couldn't be no service to anybody else if I didn't get honest with me and know who I was. 'Cause see, this thing is not always about me. It's about the new baby that's coming through the door. And if I know my experience, and if I know what got me here, then I'm able to share with that new baby's coming through the door my experience, strength, and hope, and not the mess. You know, my mess. It's not about sharing the mess. It's about sharing the message of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and we don't talk about that, you know, too much in here. I know when I go to meetings, and I hear, and I have done it, I got so much going on with me, I don't think about the newcomer that's sitting in the meeting that don't have no idea about the checking account, the bad check that I wrote, because they don't have an account. They don't want to hear that at that moment. You know what I'm saying? So I forget, you know, about the new baby. But it's the new baby that's keeping me here. You know, what I don't talk about here is that you talked about the identity with years clean, still writing bad checks. Because I'm financially unmanageable. Financially unmanageable. And one day at a time, with my honesty of talking with people who have been financially unmanageable, who have somewhat managed their finances, can give me their experience, and I'm emphasizing that because if you have not experienced, then you can't help me. How to get back on the right track, because all this is recovery. in all areas of my life, because that can cause me to use. And that's the bottom line. Using, learning how not to use, one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, 1 second at a time, some days. You know, I still got a whole lot rattling up here. And what we don't talk about here is how our disease of addiction is a disease of addiction. It's just that, disease of addiction. And it switches back and forth. Whatever I like, I can be obsessed with. Whatever. I cannot go to Delaware Park. I cannot go to Dover Downs. Nope. I cannot go to Atlantic City, Trump Towers. Mm-hmm. I do not know how to do anything in moderation. Mm-hmm. When I go to those places, I spend the damn electric bill money, the rent, the car note. And I do talk about that in my home group, because it is a disease of addiction. I have a disease that wants my life, and its job is to kill, steal, and destroy whatever means it takes to get to do that. You know, and sometimes it wants me to take the focus off. My disease is so cunning, you know. After having a little bit of time, it used to be that it would drop, the bag would be on the ground, you know, or I would see somebody from my past, and they would ask me how I'm doing and all that, and didn't want to slip me their phone number. No, my disease is so cunning that it would come through the children, it would come through my family, it would come through my man. And if I'm not spiritually grounded, did they talk about those first three steps? That's starting to prepare me, you know, for the life situations that's about to happen. You know, I found early on that some of the things that I asked for later on in recovery, they wasn't presented to me early because I wasn't ready. Because if God has allowed that to happen, who knows where I would be? You know, I am going to say he did allow my children to come back into my life early, you know. And I had to remember that I had children because, see, I was blessed to be able to go through the process. And my process was the treatment facility, the detox, the treatment facility, the transitional home, and the Oxford House. That was my process with two children. I was blessed because my parents took care of my children, you know, and I realized that, you know. But when I got in that Oxford House, those women had to remind me I had children. I had responsibilities. I couldn't stay up in that Oxford House forever and ever and ever. I wanted to. I wanted to duck the responsibilities, you know, live that single life. You know, but I didn't. I was able to get married early in recovery. And what happened with that is that the God of my understanding allowed me to be able to go through the process of death also. Because I was married 18 months with 4 years clean, and my husband committed suicide as a direct result of using. You know, and it was the women in this program to help me go through the process of the burial. Of course, mind you, 18 months, I ain't had no life insurance. So my family gave me the money You people gave me the money to be able to bury him, told me to go to social services, gave me that process, you know, told me what to do. And I was able to hold tight to that network of women that surrounded me because you all was walking me at that time because I wasn't able to walk, you know. And, you know, one time I went to a meeting and somebody told me, we don't talk about that kind of stuff in here. And that really hurt my feelings. And if I wasn't grounded, I would have used. But what I did was I cried to my sponsor. You know, and at that time I didn't know my sponsor was going through changes and trial, you know, situations herself because she was there for me. You know, and better yet, I was there for her because it's a two-way street sponsorship, you know. And I'm saying this to say that when I talked to my sponsor that I have now about this topic, you know, she told me to drop it like it was hot, you know, and to be honest, you know, I love my sponsor dearly, but I needed some more guidance. I needed to be pinpointed, you know, some different things that I could talk about. Because for real, it's about the newcomer. I don't want the newcomer to think because I have XYZ years that, and I go into a meeting and share whatever it is that I'm, you know, I'm just spitting up in a meeting. I don't want that newcomer to feel not a part of. You know, I want that newcomer to feel a part of, you know, because that's what it's about, the newcomer. That's why we're here, you know. We all get together, and there's a lot of newcomers here. They've never been to a convention. To see all these addicts. Recovering addicts, because we're recovering today. I don't practice those things, you know, that could cause me to use. And I have to look at everything, all areas, you know, of my life. I still got some time. And I'm still nervous. And I hope somebody in here gets a message. If just one person, you know, it's okay. It really is okay. You know what I'm saying? And what's okay is whatever you're feeling, you're not by yourself. You all told me I was going to be all right. I'm so nervous. I hope I made sense. You know, it's not about the down and dirty and the secrets. It is about the secrets that I don't want y'all to know, because whatever I may expose about myself, you may have been feeling or thinking and didn't know how to express it or expose it. But being though that it was exposed, I exposed it, it made it a little bit easier for you. You know, you know, this program is so awesome. The God of my understanding, if I put limitations on the God of my understandings, I would come up short. You know, he's blessed me so many ways. With 10 years clean, I was homeless, along with the gambling, but then also the people that I was, the house I was living in went into foreclosure and the people didn't tell us. So we was living out of a hotel. But then God blessed us with an apartment, you know, and now he's blessed us with a bigger apartment. And we have our children, you know. And he's going to allow me to get married again. You know, if I would have just took my will and did some of the things that I wanted to do without giving this thing a chance, I would have been dead. You know, and not seeing the blessings that I'm starting to see, you know. So if you're new here, please give yourself a chance. Stay. One day at a time, 1 second at a time, you know, 1 minute at a time, however it takes. You know, those things, if you're still doing things like I heard you share, if you're still practicing some different behaviors, that's going to change regardless of what you try to do because it's going to change. Because you're no longer going to be able to tolerate it. Because you're starting to, I'm starting to have a God conscience. So those God conscience that I'm developing will not allow me to act in certain ways anymore. And what's happening is that the God conscience is not even putting certain situations in my life anymore. You know, it's allowing me to experience some new things. You know, I want to tell you briefly about this week. This week has been really, really one of those weeks, you know, with the job, and we moved and we're still moving because we also have a thing with letting go. You know, letting go of the old apartment. We have a dog that we're attached to and we can't bring her into this new apartment. So we tell ourselves that we're going to keep this apartment to use it as storage, and we can keep the dog longer. Well, one more time, the delusion. The illusion, you know, that we can afford this.
Right.
Well, I need to be honest, it's only one of us working. And to be able to keep both things, something one more time is going to have to be short. Sacrificing, you know. Okay, well and good, but the apartment I know has to go. The dog has to go. We need to find something to do with the belongings that we have accumulated because it's no longer just me. And in this process of all week, we've been without a TV. Now tell me this isn't God. We have to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have this 16-year-old girl who likes to use the telephone 24/7. With no TV, constantly on the telephone, the things happening, you know, at this other apartment, so I'm on edge. I'm on the edge, and I made a therapy appointment to go talk to the therapist. Because, see, you all told me that sometimes we had to go outside of this program to seek some help, professional help. And I need to learn how to deal with my 16-year-old, myself, and my mate without fighting. Not physically fighting all the time, verbally fighting. And see, all this is in the process of recovery. The new things that I've learned in the programs of Narcotics Anonymous is that there is some help. No matter what you want, you can get some help. So I go to therapy and I tell the therapist what's going on and she give me some suggestions and I go home and I ain't practice none of it. I ain't practice none of it. Because see, what she told me is that I'm a passive aggressive type of person. So I'll let it all pile up. And then I'll explode on you. And I'm not trying to explode today. Because, see, what happens is I'll go to the movie theater, and the usher will get it.
Right.
no exaggeration, I've been rustling and tussling in movie theaters with 9, 10 years clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not proud of that. I'm not saying that because I'm proud of it. I'm saying it because that's how my anger can go and lead me. You know, my disease. You know, so I didn't practice any of it. And yesterday, I caught myself when my daughter came through the apartment door with one of her friends because she was getting ready to do hair, and I told her she couldn't loiter in the hallway. So she stood there and thought about it for a few minutes, and then I pushed the door back, but it wasn't closed. So she smashes in, and I'm behind the door. And I had to catch myself from yanking her up against the wall. Because, see, I say that I don't suffer from the short girl complex, but I still do. Mm-hmm. And I have to let you know that you can't run over me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I did it in a nice, different way. What I did was I allowed her friends in, and I took her in the back and let her have it, verbally,
mm-hmm.
You know, nicely. I didn't hurt her feelings to a certain extent, you know. It's 4 o'clock. We don't talk about that in here. You know, I really hope that somebody got a message of recovery in this meeting. And I thank the program chair again for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.
Addict named Drew, let's thank both our speakers again. Before you leave, let's close with the Serenity.